We've been talking about what are the things that fire up whoever's up here speaking, whether it's a particular portion of the Bible or maybe a particular character in the Bible. And that's what we're talking about in the course of this series. And I will tell you that for me, knowing that this was the final weekend of the series and knowing that this was kind of bringing it home, I've been feeling this sense of pressure pretty much all week to say something that's going to rally the troops and really fire everybody up. And in the midst of that, just been struggling through what to say and kind of had my plan on what to say and realized that it wasn't God's plan. It wasn't God's plan. And in the midst of what I went through this week, what happened was what I would like to call a preacher's gift. It was a preacher's gift. See, here's the preacher's gift. When there's something that you're going to be talking about like that next weekend and you fail miserably on it the week leading up to that, that's a preacher's gift right there. That is just, that's what you want. Because first of all, it just teaches you that, okay, now it's very clear what I need to talk about because it's right where I am. And you just find God in an awesome way. So that's what I'm going to do today, because what I want to talk to you about is what does it look like to live a life that is fueled by faith? And there's a lot of definitions we could use for faith, but this is the one I want to use today. Faith for me is choosing God's plan versus my plan. And that's what I came face to face with this weekend, and it's a part of my story for the last 3 years of my life, and that's what I'm going to share with you today. So before we go any further, just join me in a word of prayer. God, I've done this a couple times now, and I just continue to recognize that I am in process on this. And so I just admit that, God, I'm in process. And I need to hear this as much as anybody in here. And so, God, I ask that you would speak, and that we would just be in a place where we can just resonate with what you want to say to all of us here today. In Jesus' name, amen. Choosing God's plan over my plan, something that I have been dealing with for the last 3 years in a really intense way, been a big part of my journey. And so I would say my journey on this kind of started in 2004. 2004 was a good year. Coming from 03 into 04, life was pretty good. Had tasted success, had a great marriage that was going well, still going well, had just awesome things going on at work. I was kind of, you know, one of the top performers in my area, the company at P&G. Things were going well. The opportunities were definitely on the upside. So coming into 2004, man, things were really going good. Really going good. And later on in 2004, got even better. I got a promotion. First time managing people. And so at P&G, that's a big nod, because what that says, particularly in my function in sales, is we see you as being one of our leaders for the next generation. We're putting you in charge of a team, and we want to see you deliver in that because we have more planned for you in the future. So I'm coming into 2004, and things were going well, and they should have been going well because I had a plan. I had a plan. Back in college, when I was in Pittsburgh, my plan was to graduate with honors, and I knocked that out, and I got that done. And I knew that I was going to have an opportunity to have this great job with P&G, and I wanted to come in and perform well, and I was doing that. So my plan was working, so things were going well. I'm probably 3 months or so in the job, though, and all of a sudden, some things started to unravel. First of all, I was put in the situation of being younger than most of the people that I was managing. And I had people who really had been doing the job that I was supposed to coach and train them on longer than I had been alive. That's a great place to be as a first-time manager. That's what you really want, right? Especially when they don't have a problem telling you that over and over again. So I'm in that situation trying to process through that and figure this piece out. At the same time, I was traveling more than I had ever traveled before. I would say in that period, I was out of the house on average 3 nights a week. In Cleveland, in Columbus, in Kentucky, in West Virginia. I was kind of traveling the area that I had to cover and spent a lot of time away. So disconnected from family, disconnected from my wife, disconnected from friends, disconnected from routine. I'm a person who likes routine and just didn't have routine, didn't know what bed I was going to be sleeping in that night, and just learning to adjust to all of that. And so in the midst of this plan that I had just kind of meticulously thought out and was working my way through, there were some curves and some things that were coming into the plan. And it really came to a head on a day that I'll never forget. It was a day, like I said, about 3 or 4 months into my new role. And I was driving from Canton, Ohio, coming back to Cincinnati. And I had spent some time with one of my reps making the trip home. And I'm driving down the road. I was right outside of Columbus. And I was behind the wheel, and all of a sudden, I blacked out. And I came to, and I was just drenched with sweat. My hands felt really clammy, and my heart felt like it was going to beat out of my chest. I had no idea what had happened. No idea. And I remember just pulling over, getting off the highway, getting into a parking lot, and just sitting there, just trying to collect myself. Just trying to figure out what just happened. And I remember sitting in that situation and saying, okay, I can't stay here. I got to do something. And so I went to a place and got some food and something to drink. I said, well, maybe I was just hungry or just not taking care of, you know, being hydrated. And so I did that and felt a little bit better, but I knew something was up. So I called my doctor. I called the office and I tell them what happened. And they're like, well, you just need to come in and see us immediately. You need to come in. We need to check this out. And then I called Maria, my wife. In retrospect, probably not the best call to make to your wife to say, basically, hey, I just blacked out on the highway, an hour from home, and now I'm about to get back in the car and drive again to get to the doctor's office. So probably not the best way to position it to her. But I just wanted to, you know, wanted her to know what ditch to look for me in if I didn't make it home. So I thought I was doing the right thing. So I get to the doctor. I get to the doctor, and he's not really saying a whole lot to me. He's doing his examination. He's looking, you know, doing the things that he would normally do. Doesn't say much to me, except for this one zinger he gives me as he's writing on his script and he's about to send me out the door. He says, you know, we need to check to make sure there's nothing wrong with your heart. And so we're going to send you to the cardiologist so you can get some tests. I'm 28. And this is what he says to me. So a couple weeks go by, I'm able to get an appointment with the cardiologist. And in the meantime, I've probably had 4 more of these episodes. I remember just waking up in the middle of the night, heart beating out of my chest. And I felt like I was about to die. Didn't know what was going on. Got to the cardiologist. All the tests came back negative. Okay, great. Nothing's wrong with my heart. But I'm still having these symptoms. I'm still having these episodes. And then they send me to the inner ear specialist. They said, maybe you have vertigo. And so I don't know if you have vertigo or have ever been tested for vertigo, but the way that they test you is they basically give you vertigo. So they put all these liquids in your ears and the room just starts spinning. And I'm, you know, 8 hours later and the room is still spinning. Now, I know for some of you, you might have spent freshman year in college that way. That's how you woke up every Saturday. For me, it was different, you know. This is the 11:45 service. Some of you, the room might be spinning right now. I know that. So just want to call that out. But for me, it was very uncomfortable. And turned out I didn't have vertigo. So moving on to the next thing. And they would check all kinds of things. And I remember I was having these episodes. And I had one in Richmond, Kentucky. And I found myself in the Patty A. Clay Medical Center in Richmond, Kentucky, at Eastern Kentucky University. And I'm sitting in this emergency room. They do all the same tests that they had done every other time I went to the emergency room for this. Nothing comes back. And I'm just like, what is going on? What is going on? I finally go back to my doctor. And he says, hey, we've done every test we know to do. But let me ask you, what's going on with you in your personal life? And so I start to tell him about my new job and getting acclimated to that. You know, I've been traveling more than I've traveled before, and that piece is a part of it too. And I remember him sitting down and looking at me in the eyes and saying, I think you might have anxiety attacks. And I'm like, panic attacks? Like, anxiety attacks, the same thing? Yeah, I think that might be what you have. And he took out his script pad again, and he wrote a script for Lexapro. And Lexapro is a SSRI antidepressant. And I took that script, but I also took with it the stigma that I had attached to what that meant. Because to me, that meant I couldn't hack it. I couldn't manage my life. My life was not manageable. And so I needed help. And just even in thinking about sharing that this weekend and going back to that day, I can remember just this utter sense of being out of control and not knowing what to do with that. And for me, let me say that if you're in here today, and I know there's probably people in here who deal with that, let me say that I am not saying that there is not a real issue that drives that. There is. There's a chemical reality to that. And I live that, so I understand that. I also know for me that there was a spiritual reality as well. And the spiritual reality for me goes back to this struggle of my plan versus God's plan. And I look back on that day and recognize that really it was a blessing in disguise. Because it set me on a journey to find out what does it really look like to have a life that is fueled by trusting God as opposed to trusting in myself and trusting in my plan. And one of the things I did is I just was at that situation. I just took stock and said, well, how did I get here? How did I get here? And also, I went to the Bible because I believe the Bible has wisdom for my life. And I look in the Bible and I see stories of people who've been able to have what I'm going to call surrendered faith. People who've been able to surrender their plan to God. And I begin to see some things in some of those stories. And in particular, I saw some things in the story of a man called Abraham that I want to share with you today. Because for me, it's been a journey. I'm still in process on this. And as I've experienced this journey, I find some inspiration and some encouragement by looking at the example of Abraham. And Abraham's story shows up in the Bible in a couple places. One of the places it shows up is in the first book of the Bible, Genesis, where we get kind of his story in detail. But it also shows up in the passage that we want to look at today, which is in the book of Hebrews. And Hebrews was a letter that was written to the early churches. And one of the things that the author did was, as he was getting to the end of the letter, he starts to list a litany of all these people. I like to call it the Hall of Fame of Faith. All these people who lived this life that was fueled by faith. And Abraham actually gets a lot of airplay in this particular chapter in Hebrews 11. And that's what we want to look at. We want to look at that kind of rendition of Abraham's story. And we find that starting in Hebrews 11, verse 8, where it says, by faith, Abraham, when called to go to a place he would later receive as his inheritance, obeyed and went, even though he did not know where he was going. By faith, he made his home in the promised land, like a stranger in a foreign country. He lived in tents, as did Isaac and Jacob, who were heirs with him of the same promise. For he was looking forward to the city with foundations, whose architect and builder was God. Goes on to say, by faith, Abraham, even though he was past age, and Sarah herself was barren, was enabled to become a father, because he considered him faithful who made the promise. And so from this one man, and he as good as dead, came descendants as numerous as the stars in the sky and as countless as the sand on the seashore. And we'll skip a couple of verses to verse 17, where it says, by faith, Abraham, when God tested him, offered Isaac as a sacrifice. He who had received the promises was about to sacrifice his one and only son, even though God had said to him, it is through Isaac that your offspring will be reckoned. Give you a little bit of background on what this is. The story of Abraham starts, like I said, and we find it in detail in the first book of the Bible, the book of Genesis. And what we know about Abraham is he was from a land that was called Ur. And one of the things we know is that land was filled with people who didn't necessarily identify or connect with the God of the Bible. So Abraham is in this situation, living this life, and the story says that God came to Abraham, that God had this specific plan for Abraham's life, and he came to him in a very personal and intimate way and said to Abraham, hey, I've got some plans for your life. They are different than the plans you probably were headed on, but I've got some plans and some promises I want to make to you. And one of the things he said is, Abraham, I'm going to give you a child, and not only a child, but your offspring will be as numerous as the sand on the seashore. And at the time, Abraham and his wife did not have children. So that was a promise that had yet to be fulfilled. And not only that, but God also said to Abraham, and I've got this place. I've got a land. It's a promised land for you and for your offspring. And if you will follow me, I want to take you to that land. And I look at this story and I think about this man, Abraham, who probably grew up looking at his father, looking at his grandfather, and having a good idea about what his plan would be in life. We can look at the story and other things that we know about the people in that time and say that Abraham probably wasn't a poor man. He probably already had some means. He probably had some things and some wealth based on his family. But yet God comes to Abraham and says, hey, I want you to leave this life, this plan that you have, and I want to take you in this totally different direction. And what we find is because of the response that Abraham had, he's among the people who are listed in this Hall of Fame of Faith in Hebrews with the story that we read. And when I thought about where I was and I started taking stock, I realized that there were some things I could learn from this man, Abraham, because Abraham's faith was fueled because he was willing to surrender some things to God. And maybe, just maybe, I was in the situation that I was in, and I had hit this wall because there were some things I also needed to surrender. And so what we find is some things that Abraham surrendered kind of play out in the story that we see in Hebrews. Let's start back at verse 8, where it says, "By faith Abraham, when called to go to a place he would later receive as his inheritance, obeyed and went, even though he did not know where he was going." The first thing Abraham surrendered was his destination. Abraham was willing to surrender his destination. He was willing to say, "Hey, I've got a plan." I'm sure he did. "But God's got this different place to take me. I don't know where it is," but it says that he obeyed and he went. Abraham surrendered his destination. And I begin to take stock in my own life and say, okay, well, what was my destination? Where am I headed? Where am I headed that would put me in the situation where I'm having these anxiety attacks? Where was I headed? And if I'm honest with you, my destination was really focused around performance. My destination was about what I was going to do. It was about what I was going to do. Such to the point that almost every aspect of my life felt like I was on a stage. It felt like I was performing, doing something for someone. And it wasn't all bad stuff. I mean, I can remember at the time thinking about being new in marriage and wanting to be a good husband. So what are the things I need to do to be a good husband? And I'm on the treadmill trying to just do the right things and hit those marks to be a good husband. Not that that's a bad thing. But then at work, had this plan, this career plan. What am I doing at P&G? And how am I going to get to this destination? Okay, well, I got to hit these marks. I got to do the right things. I got to go early and stay late. I've got to be the person that's spending more time in the field with their reps than anybody else. I've got to do this stuff. I got to do the right things. My destination was based on performance. And even here at Crossroads. Okay, well, where am I going to serve? What am I going to do? How am I going to give back? Because I got to do the right things. I was focused on doing the right things. That was my plan. You do the right things in college. You graduate with honors. You get a good job. You work really hard. You get promoted. I was doing the right things. And I had to realize that all of that performance was literally driving me crazy. It was driving me crazy. Why? Because you know what? The reality I knew was at some point a ball's going to drop. I can't do all this. I would look at my calendar, I'd look at my planner, and it was just full of all this stuff to do. And I knew a ball was going to drop, and it couldn't be my marriage. I can't drop the ball in my marriage. I got to do the right things. I got to do that well. But man, I can't drop the ball at work. I got to hit these marks. I got to get promoted. I got to do this. This is for my family. I got to do that. I can't drop the ball. I can't drop the ball at work. And I definitely can't drop the ball at Crossroads. What do you mean? This is my church community. This is the place where I'm connecting with God. I got to be serving. I got to be involved. I can't drop the ball. And I had generalized anxiety. And it was having a physical manifestation in my body. It was actually physically impacting me. Because I had the wrong destination. And I had to surrender that destination of performance and say, you know what? If my definition of success is based on what I do, I'm going to be in a vicious cycle. My destination, my definition of success can't be based on what I do. I had to surrender that destination. Abraham surrendered his destination. Another thing Abraham surrendered, we see in verse 11, where it says, "By faith Abraham, even though he was past age," he was probably about 100 at the time, "and Sarah herself was 90, was enabled to become a father because he considered him faithful who had made the promise." Now, I'll tell you, this is one of the stories and one of the reasons why I really, really like particularly the Old Testament of the Bible. Love the Bible. It's full of great stories. I love some of those old stories. And one of the reasons I love them is because you don't get this perfect picture of these people who are following God. You get them warts and all. You find their faults. You find that they were real people. People I can relate to. And I just appreciate that. You got to appreciate the fact that even in this story, you got a 100-year-old and a 90-year-old getting it on still. That's just awesome in and of itself, right? Some good stuff in there. So this is one of those situations, though, where when you read the full story of Abraham's life, he wasn't always surrendering his plans. He didn't always start out by surrendering his plans, because in this particular case, he knew he had gotten his promise. God said, hey, I'm going to give you offspring and your offspring are going to be numerous. But yet he and his wife, being past childbearing age, still didn't have a child yet. And so they decided, God, we heard your promise, but we're going to work our own plan to get to your promise. Anybody ever done that? Am I the only one that's done that? Tried to work your own plan to get to the promise? So that's what they were trying to do. And what their plan was this. Hey, Sarah said, I got handmaiden. She's still of childbearing age. Abraham, why don't you lie with her and have a child with her? And that will be the promised child. And that's how we can start this whole thing of offspring in our family, since we haven't had a child on our own yet. That was their plan, but it was clear that it wasn't God's plan. It wasn't God's plan. So then what happened is, at some point they recognized, okay, we tried it our way. This is not God's plan. We just need to trust in the God that made the promise that we're going to have a child. The two of us, even though we're old, are going to have a child. And they laughed about that. When they heard that they would have children at that age, they actually got a little chuckle out of that. Sarah in particular got a little chuckle out of that. And that's why, when that promise was fulfilled, they did have a son. His name was Isaac. And Isaac means laughter, because they looked back on the time when they laughed at just the absurdity of somebody that old having a baby, but yet God had promised it. And when they got to a place where they surrendered their plans, God fulfilled his promise. So I went back to my own life and I said, you know what? What are my plans? What might be some plans I need to surrender? And I can tell you there were two instances where I really came face to face with what this looked like for me. One of those was, at the time, and maybe a little bit before the actual incidents, I remember we had a leadership celebration at Crossroads. It was for people who were volunteering around here. And Brian talked about three R's, and I don't remember all the R's, but I remember the first one was release. And it was about, okay, what are the things you need to release? And immediately I knew, for me, it was a career plan. Because here's the truth. The truth is, I have been struggling living in this world of saying, I'm either going to make my mark being a full-time pastor, maybe leading my own church, and that's maybe going to be what I do, or I'm going to make my mark in corporate, and I'm going to be a fantastic leader, and I'm going to do that. And I was living kind of saying, I can't do both of these. One of these has to play out. And so that was my plan. That's how I was focused. But let me tell you that there was also something a little bit deeper than that. Let me get even more honest with you. I had tried some steps in the whole pastor church thing. Engaged in coming on staff here a couple times before it happened. It just never happened. And, you know, was going to school for that and wound up not completing that. And I had some pain associated with that plan, because I really wanted that. I really wanted that. And it just seemed like it wasn't playing out. So what I did is I said, you know what? Because of the pain associated with getting that close to it and having it not happen, I'm going to shut that door and I'm just going to focus on the corporate. And I'm going to get as much money as I can. I'm going to get as high in the company as I can. I'm going to be as influential as I can. I'm going to retire, and then I'm going to work the rest of my plan. I wasn't trying to be greedy, but that's what I was focused on. And I realized that wasn't God's plan. And that day when we were in that leadership event and we were challenged in terms of what would we give up, what would we release? For me, I knew I had to hold both of those with an open hand and say, God, what's your plan? I need to surrender my plan and say, God, what's your plan? And even as recent as 8 months ago, continued to grow on this one and realize what it looked like, because I was still in corporate. I was still at P&G. And in the midst of that, was in a job that was a stepping stone to really breaking the window and getting into some of the really high-paying, you know, well-rewarding jobs. 2-3 years away from more money than I could ever imagine making. 2-3 years away from really being set, being able to build wealth for my family in ways that had never happened before in our generation. I just knew that I was so close to that. And that's why, when I had this conversation one day with my manager, it was a total surrender thing, because I knew that that was within reach and I knew I could hit that mark. But I also knew that if I did, I was going to be right back on that treadmill. And that thing was going to wind up putting me in a situation that wasn't healthy for me. And so I had a conversation with my manager, and I told her, I said, you know, I know that there's a lot of opportunity ahead of me, and I appreciate the opportunities that have been given to me, but I want to slow down my career progression. I'm going to take myself off of the fast track that I'm on. And I'd rather focus on work that I'm passionate about and doing that and kind of letting the chips fall where they may than to continue on this fast track. And I remember journaling about that later, and I wrote in my journal, today I had my emancipation proclamation. Because for me, having that conversation, that was surrendering my plans. And I just knew that I had to surrender those plans. Abraham surrendered his plans. But there's a third thing that Abraham surrendered, and I think this is really the biggest challenge for all of us. It certainly was for me. Because in verse 17, it says, by faith, Abraham, when God tested him, offered Isaac as a sacrifice. He who had received the promises was about to sacrifice his one and only son. Now remember the promises that God made to Abraham. One of the promises was you're going to have a child, and that child would be the beginning of offspring that are more numerous than the seashore. All of those promises were embodied in his son, Isaac. They were embodied in his boy. And Abraham had all his hopes. He had all those promises in Isaac. And that's why this story that we find is amazing, because what we see here is that Abraham was willing to surrender Isaac. He was willing to surrender Isaac. What did that look like? God tested Abraham and actually challenged him and asked him to kill his son. I know that sounds crazy. Why would God do that? What is that about? Well, there's a couple things we know. First of all, we know the end of the story. He did not have to kill his son. We know that. And we also know that God was not about child sacrifice. That happened in other cultures in that day, but that was not something that God was endorsing at all. But God was testing Abraham with the thing that was most precious to him. And so the story says that Abraham actually took his son, and they had to travel, and they traveled to a mountain, and they went up on that mountain. And Abraham actually began to prepare the sacrifice, and he had actually gotten so far as to lay his son on the altar. He was about to kill his son because God tested him. And actually the story says that he had even gotten to the point where he had drawn the knife back and he was about to plunge it through his son. And at the point that that happened, he heard a voice. That same God that had a personal, intimate relationship with him said, send an angel, and the angel said, whoa, whoa, you don't have to do that. You don't have to sacrifice your son, because now God knows that you wouldn't even hesitate to do that. That if I called you to surrender Isaac, you would do that. To have a life that's fueled by faith. So the story says that Abraham actually did not sacrifice his son, and that in fact there was a ram in the bush, and they were able to take that ram and sacrifice the ram instead. And he left that mountain with his son. But he was willing to surrender Isaac, the thing that was most precious to him. And that's where this, literally the last 2 days, this for me has kind of come to fruition again. Because my Isaac, the thing that's most precious to me, is other people's opinion of me. That's why that's not what I wanted to talk about this week. That's why I wanted to fire people up. Because I care too much about what people think about me. I can look back at 2004 and I can look at the stress that I was living in. I can look at all the places where I was performing and I can realize that I was focusing too much on other people's opinion of me. You see, I'm sure it was hard for Abraham to give up his destination and surrender that. Yes, that was hard. It was hard for me. And I know it was hard to surrender your plans. I know for me that was a challenge. But you know what? When it comes to surrendering Isaac, that thing that's most precious, reality check for me was even 48 hours ago, I still was struggling with surrendering that. But there's some encouragement, because not only did Abraham surrender those things. I mean, I think sometimes we hear the word surrender and we think about hands up in the air, totally helpless. And there is this part of surrender that's about giving up. However, the other thing that Abraham did is he walked in God's direction. He walked in God's direction. Abraham, if you look at those verses, there were actions that he did that said, okay, God, if that's what you're calling me to surrender, I'll do that and I will walk in your direction. So God, if you're asking me to surrender my destination, I will do that. I will obey and I will go into the wilderness to a place that I don't know where I'm heading. God, if you're calling me to surrender my plans and this way that we tried to work it out with the handmaid is not your plan, I will do that. And I will just trust that you are able to give my wife and I a child. I will walk in that direction. Man, God, you're asking me to give up Isaac. This is my son. This is my son. But come on, Isaac, let's go. Let's go. And I had to realize that it wasn't only about surrender, but surrender is one of the ways that we walk in God's direction. And that's what God really wants for all of us. So as we come to the end of the Fuel series, I'm coming to the realization for myself that the challenge may not be about what am I putting into the tank. My challenge may just be what needs to come out. What do I need to surrender? I'm going to ask Andrea to come out, and we're going to sing a song in a moment that's about surrender. Because I really believe that we all have something. We all have something that we need to surrender. We all have an Isaac, something that's precious to us. And to think about that Isaac, I want you to think about it this way. What is the one thing that you know if you gave up would probably open you up to a more vibrant relationship with God? See, I believe that that is the essence of what it means to live a life fueled by faith. And one of the reasons that I know that is because in Hebrews chapter 11, the writer goes through this litany of all these people who have lived this life fueled by faith. And then as he moves into chapter 12, he's kind of summing this all up for his readers. And he's saying, all right, so what is the challenge for you? What are you to do with this? And these are the words that he gives to the readers. And I think these are the words for us. In Hebrews chapter 12, starting at verse 1, it says, therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, people like Abraham who have been willing to have this surrendered faith to God, since we're surrounded by these types of stories, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles. And let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. Let us fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith. As he moves into this conclusion, based on all of these stories that he's just told, what is his challenge? His challenge is, so what is the thing that you need to throw off? What's holding you back? What do you need to surrender? You know, I really believe that today, this is something that we can come together and pray about. And we can do that through a prayer experience that I'm going to invite you to be a part of at this time. If you feel like there's something you need to surrender, and you know what that one thing is, I invite you to join in with this. And I'd ask you to close your eyes. And I want you to get this picture in your mind. It talks about running a race. And the word that's used for race there is actually the word for pain. It's the word where we get pain from. So we can assume it's a long race. So I want you to imagine yourself running a marathon. You're running a marathon. And a marathon is hard enough, but I want you to now recognize that you are running a marathon with a heavy bag on your back. And in your bag is the thing that you need to surrender. Now, for some of us, it may not be a bad thing. It may be something that's not bad, but it's something that has been just really getting in the way of our relationship with God. We've been choosing good instead of great. But for some of us, it may be something that, like it was for me, it wasn't healthy for you. Maybe there are fears that have been driving your life for way too long. And a particular fear, and maybe that's the one thing that you need to surrender. You know, I believe for some of us it is a unhealthy thought pattern or an unhealthy behavior, what the Bible calls sin. And that sin is something that you hold dear, and it's something that's really hard to give up. But you know, if you gave it up, it would lead you to a vibrant relationship with God. For some of us, that may be the very thing we need to surrender today. I want you to get a picture of what that is for you, and I want you to see yourself running a marathon with this weight on your back. You're running this race, and that bag is really getting heavy. When all of a sudden, behind you, you hear footsteps. And it's someone running the race faster than you've ever been able to run it. And they come alongside you, right next to you. And in your own way, you know that it's Jesus. Jesus is running this race. And he asks you a simple question. Will you give it to me? Will you give it to me? Whatever that burden is, will you give it to me? You see, I believe that today is an opportunity for us to surrender things that may have been weighing us down for years. And if you want to take that opportunity, I want you to see yourself taking that bag off of your back and giving it to Jesus. He can handle it. He knows what it is. He can handle it. Take that bag off and give it to Jesus. And as you do that, I want you to just feel your back getting straighter. I want you to feel your shoulders getting lighter from a burden that you've been carrying for way too long. And then Jesus begins to run in front of you. And he just says, look to me. Look to me. God, I just know that as I pray, I've got to start with me. God, I just confess that even today, it's been tough for me to surrender. It's been tough for me to give up other people's opinion of me. And God, I just call that out and say, God, I just want to give that to you. I don't want to carry that burden. And God, I just believe that there are people in here who made the same commitment today. And I'm just asking, Father, that we would just see, that we would see that Jesus can more than handle that burden. And that we can look to him as the author and the perfecter of our faith. God, we can have lives that are fueled by faith simply by looking to Jesus. So I thank you for that. I thank you for the gift of today. Amen. Let me say that for many of us, I think there's a temptation in today. I think the temptation is to give up one burden, to give up one weight, and very easily go and pick up something else to replace it. And I just want to say to you, you do not have to do that. Jesus can handle all of your burdens. Give them all to him.